This podcast is intended for a mature audience. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome back to Legend of the Bones. Following in the footsteps of giants, Legend of the Bones is a chimera. A mix of old-school tabletop RPG and dark fantasy storytelling. As its name might suggest, in Legend of the Bones, the dice rule. There'll be no rerolls, no fudging the dice, no metacurrency. The roll of the bones will determine the character's destiny, and no one will be spared their fate. None shall escape the destiny of Bone. Last time on Legend of the Bones, the party arrived back at Innis Gwyn, in the company of Brannock, Reeve of Halstone, whom they met by chance during their sea voyage. After making their way to the monastery, they were met by Brother Ranulf, who escorted them to a waiting room. Brother Cadfael arrived, with whom Brannock had business, and who was an old comrade in arms of the Reeve. Presently, Wiglaf entered and was quickly confronted by Jenna. The young novitiate harboured resentment towards the abbot, whom she had previously revealed as being in league with members of the Brethren of the Purifying Light. However, without proof, the companions had little choice but to hand over the gold disc recovered from Kerodu, in exchange for access to the library, though Wiglaf steadfastly refused anyone but Lena to do so. Later, Cadfael, a critic of the abbot, explained that Ranulf had overheard part of Wiglaf's conversations with the Brethren leader, Reynard, and revealed that the Brethren were planning to usurp the kingdom and establish a religious state founded on the cult's twisted ideology. In addition, Cadfael told them that Reynard had already found three of the jewels from Vortigern's crown, and that through Wiglaf's research, the cleric now had the last known location of the final two jewels. This information the abbot had sealed in the library's vault, to which only Wiglaf had the key, yet Cadfael revealed that there was a secret passage which could take them to the vault, and the existence of a second key hidden nearby. The companions located the passage, which initially led them to the monastery's crypt, where they have discovered something monstrous feeding off the dead. Chapter 35, Part 1, Day 37. Night. Party status. Beric, 28 out of 28 hit points. Lena, 20 out of 20 hit points. Valen, 15 out of 15 hit points. Talion, 21 out of 21 hit points. Knut, 23 out of 24 hit points. Jenna, 6 out of 6 hit points. Spells available. Valen has memorized Push, Shield, Soothe, and Revive. Talion has memorized Poetic Prose, Resolve, and Pitch. Lena can pray for 2 first level miracles and 1 second level miracle. The flickering flames of the sconces cast their yellow glow on the limestone walls, bringing a false sense of warmth to the monastery's pillared crypt. Nested within the alcoves were stone tombs of Innis Gwyn's most honoured dead, some topped with delicately carved effigies of their inhabitants, whereas others were plain and unadorned, a reflection of their earthly rejection of material comforts. To the south, an archway led to an upward stairs, whilst in the centre of the chamber, engraved into the flagstone floor, just across from the now ruined entrance to the secret passageway, was a symbol of the Nine, an 8-pointed star set within a circle, with Solon, the giver of life, at its hub. At the northern end of the crypt, on a plinth, was a statue of the embodiment of Naya, the goddess of birth, dreams, and death. She stood serenely watching over the endless sleep of the dead, but the stillness of the sanctuary had been desecrated. Standing among the scattered debris, Beric shivered involuntarily in the cool underground air. He was not cold, rather the sight before him made his skin crawl. Three stone sarcophagi stood in the open near Naya's statue, clearly the tombs of the most pious given their position. The nearest, though, like the entrance to the secret passage, was now little more than rubble. The thing which had destroyed it chittered, clambering over its handiwork, the torchlight reflecting off its smooth black armour. Its 9-foot-long body jerked as it tore strips of rotting flesh from the cadaver it had pulled from the tomb. Beric heard bones snap, and he shuddered, repulsed by the monstrous insect. He instinctively took a step back, his foot catching on a small stone which scuttered away. The creature stopped, its antennae flicking and twisting. Then its massive body turned. Bits of putrid flesh still hung from its dagger-like mandibles as it stared back upon the man with black, compound eyes.
Entering combat.
The party has encountered a rock beetle. This is a custom creature, the full profile for which can be found at legendofthebones.blogspot.com. Rock beetles are huge burrowing insects which live in tunnels and caves, coming to the surface to feed when food underground is scarce. They can grow up to 12 feet in length and are protected by a hard carapace. Their 12-inch mandibles are incredibly powerful and have evolved to crush and cut through rock, which the beetle first weakens by squirting an acidic saliva. Rock beetles are carnivorous scavengers and can often be found under graveyards and in crypts, but may opportunistically attack smaller living creatures. The rock beetle has 6 hit dice, so let's roll those now. Okay, it has 32 hit points. In addition, its hard carapace gives it an ascending armor class of 17. It gets a +6 to hit, and its powerful mandibles deliver 3d8 points of damage. That means a single bite could kill anyone of the party, with the exception of Beric. Instead of biting, rock beetles can spit their acid saliva for up to 3 feet. A successful attack roll is required, and upon contact with bare skin, 1d4 points of damage are taken each round until the acid is washed off. Leather armor delays the effect for 1 round, and metal armor delays the effect for 2 rounds, but is destroyed in the process. Normal clothing offers no protection and is counted as bare skin. Let's see if either side is surprised. A roll of 1 or 2 on a d6 mean they are. The party? A 5. The rock beetle? A 1. Well, that is a stroke of luck. Round 1. No initiative as the rock beetle is surprised. The whole party move into the crypt. Valen attempts to cast shield upon himself. The mage needs to roll a 16 or less for his casting roll. An 18! The mage fumbles the incantation and the spell fades from his memory. Talion already has an arrow knocked. As this is close range, and with the bard's dexterity bonus, Talion will need to roll a 13 or more to hit. Nat 20! Now that's the kind of start the party needs. Talion's arrow will do maximum damage, plus an additional die, meaning his shot does... Wow! 12 points of damage! The bard's arrow hits one of the beetle's front legs, where the femur joins the tibia, ripping it apart. The lower part of the leg falls to the ground, as blood and ichor spray from the stump. Beric charges forward, needing a 14 or more to hit. But a 2 means the warrior's blade ricochets off the beetle's carapace. Canute likewise charges forward. The Skarne needs a 15 or more to hit. A 14, so close. But like Beric, Canute's sword cannot penetrate the beetle's hard shell. Lena joins the two warriors, swinging her hammer down overhead. The cleric needs a 16 or more. But a 7 sees Lena meet the same resistance. Valen, with practically no offensive magic, and despite his shield spell failing, decides he cannot leave his friends to fight this battle alone. He seeks to strike the beetle with his bronze staff. The mage would need a 17 or more to hit. A 14 means that once again, the blow glances harmlessly off the beetle's back. Jenna is unarmored and carries only a torch, but the novitiate is courageous and runs forward to support the others. She needs a 17 or more. A 1! Jenna trips on a piece of rubble and loses grip on the torch as she steadies herself. The novitiate will miss her next turn. Round 2. Initiative. The rock beetle. A 2. The party. A 6. The party presses the advantage. Talion draws another arrow and shoots. A 7. The bard's arrow flies wide, clattering against the limestone wall of the crypt. Beric swings Callous Cledder. A 17 is a hit for a total of 11 points of damage. The enchanted blade cracks open the carapace of the beetle's thorax, splattering foul-smelling ichor across the nearby wall. Canute also hacks down with his sword. An 18 is also a hit for a total of 3 points of damage, as the Skarne's blade bites into one of the beetle's legs. Lena swings her warhammer, hoping to break through the hard carapace. But a 13 means her blow once again glances harmlessly off the beetle's back. Valen attempts to strike with his staff. A 19 is a hit for 3 points of damage. The mage swings the solid bronze snake head down, smashing into the beetle's head. There is a cracking sound as a rent opens in the carapace and more yellow ichor splatters. Jenna misses her turn as she scrambles to recover the torch. Given the rock beetle has lost more than half its hit points, I'm going to make a morale check. It will attempt to flee on a roll of 8 or more. Rolling 2d6. A 5. The hunger that drove the creature to the surface makes it stay and fight. Time for the beetle's first attack. I will roll a d6 to randomly select its target. A 4. That's not good news. It's a Valen. The rock beetle will need just a 4 or more to hit. A 3. Once again, the mage's luck holds against overwhelming odds. He pulls his leg back just in time, leaving the beetle's mandibles to snap at air. Round 3. Initiative. The rock beetle. A 5. The party. A 6. Oh man, that was lucky. The party relentlessly pressed the advantage. Talion knocks another arrow and shoots. A 15 is a hit for 2 points of damage. The bard's arrow strikes where Beric had previously injured the insect. Beric, seeing the creature badly injured, tries to deal a killing blow. A 1! The warrior's blade gets caught in the beetle's steel-like mandibles, and as the insect moves, the sword is ripped from the warrior's hand, clattering on the flagstone floor. Beric will miss his next turn. Canute strikes down with his sword, but a 9 means his blade cannot penetrate the beetle's shell. Lena too tries to deliver the killing blow. A 7. Like Canute, the cleric's blow bounces off the carapace. Valen once again aims for the creature's head. But with a 14, he's jostled out of the way when Beric loses his weapon. Having recovered her torch, Jenna tries to thrust it in the beetle's face. But with an 8, she misjudges and instead embers fly as the torch harmlessly bumps against the insect's thorax. The rock beetle will now make its attack. Rolling for the target. It's Jenna. This is real danger for the young novitiate. Jenna has a dexterity penalty, meaning the rock beetle will need just a 3 or more. And with just 6 hit points, surely this is it for Jenna. Here is the roll. A 2! Unbelievable! I honestly thought the novitiate's death was inevitable. Perhaps the gods really are looking over her. Jenna sidesteps at the last moment, narrowly avoiding being pincered by the beetle's jaws. The rock beetle has just 1 hit point left. Victory is in sight, but if the beetle wins the next initiative, there is still real peril. Round 4. Initiative. The rock beetle. A 5. The party. A 1. The rock beetle makes one last desperate attack, rolling a d6 for the target. It's Canute. The insect will need a 9 or more to hit the Skarne warrior. A 14! Rolling 3d8 for damage. 13! The beetle snaps forward, its razor-sharp mandibles cut deep into Canute's thigh, tearing a chunk of flesh and exposing the bone. There is a mist of blood. The warrior screams in pain, staggering back as blood gouts from the wound. Seeing Canute badly wounded, Talion draws another arrow and shoots. A 14 is a hit. No need to roll damage. The bard's arrow flies true, piercing one of the beetle's eyes and driving into its brain. Its black legs buckle, and the rock beetle slumps to the ground. Well, against such a powerful monster, the party was incredibly lucky. But we cannot leave poor Canute to bleed to death, so Lena will pray for the warrior to be healed. She will need to roll a 17 or less for her miracle to be answered. A 14. Canute is healed for 6 hit points. That will be enough to patch the Skarne up, even if he might be left limping for now. With my player hat on, I've learnt my lesson from Kero Du, and I'm going to save Lena's other miracles for now. After all, you never know what might be ahead. Chapter 35, Part 2, Day 37, Night. Party status: Beric, 28 out of 28 hit points. Lena, 20 out of 20 hit points. Valen, 15 out of 15 hit points. Talion, 21 out of 21 hit points. Canute, 16 out of 24 hit points. Jenna, 6 out of 6 hit points. Spells available: Valen has memorized Push, Soothe, and Revive. Talion has memorized Poetic Prose, Resolve, and Pitch. Lena can pray for one first level miracle and one second level miracle.
Hold him still,
Lena commanded as she placed her hand over the gaping wound on Canute's leg. Jenna held the leg still while Beric put his hand on the warrior's chest.
Easy, he said softly.
Canute stared back at him with gritted teeth. The muscles of his neck taut as he fought the pain. The warrior reached up suddenly and tightly grasped Beric's arm, while Lena beseeched Solon for the miracle of divine healing. Then, as muscle, sinew, and skin knitted back together, Canute's grip softened, and his expression once again became calm. He looked at Lena.
Thank you.
There was genuine gratitude in his voice. Lena smiled.
It is not I you should thank. I am but a vessel.
Canute nodded.
All the same, I am grateful.
Come, the cleric said simply. Let us get you back on your feet.
She helped Beric pull the warrior up. Canute flexed his leg and grimaced as he rubbed the large bruise that was visible through his torn breeches.
It will need more healing, Lena explained. But for now, you should be able to walk.
The four of them joined Valen and Talion, who were inspecting the giant beetle. The two men had cut out the dagger-like mandibles, which Talion was storing in his pack.
What are you doing?
Beric asked. The bard looked at him with an expression that would suggest that his actions were completely normal.
We thought they might prove useful. And besides, these creatures are rare. Someone may pay well for them.
Beric scoffed, but if Talion took offense, he did not let it show. Lena, meanwhile, had turned her attention to the half-eaten cadaver. The cleric was clearly upset that the man's tomb had been desecrated.
We must tell Cadfael of this. The monks will want to reinter this poor soul.
Aye, Beric agreed. But the night is short, and we have a task. Come on.
The companions, following Cadfael's instruction, proceeded to one of the alcoves. Here, Beric located two small blocks that had been described by the monk, protruding ever so slightly from the wall. The warrior placed his hands upon the blocks and pushed. There was a scraping sound as a section of the wall moved backwards upon a pair of iron runners on the floor, revealing a passageway beyond. Beric took the torch from Jenna and led the companions into the passage. Once inside, they saw that there were two iron rings from which the door could be opened from the passage, and so they pushed the stone door shut before continuing on. The passage ran straight for some 30 feet before abruptly ending at a wall. Like at the crypt end, there were a pair of iron runners set into the floor and rings fixed into the wall. It's time to throw a little chance into the mix. I'm going to ask the Oracle two questions. Firstly, is the door stuck? A 5. Bad luck. That's a straight yes. Secondly,
I want to know if anything has been put directly in front of the door on the other side. A 3. That's a no but. Okay, I have an idea about that. But let's resolve the party getting this door open. Beric will need to make a strength test to pull the stuck door open. Now, I would normally apply a -2 penalty to the roll, but I'm going to allow Canute to assist, thus adding his strength bonus, which will cancel out any penalty. Beric's strength is 17, so the odds are on the big man's side. A 19! Well, that does put a spanner in the works. I must admit I was taking the success for granted. Okay, so if this was a regular game, the players would probably start asking the GM some questions. Time to consult the Oracle. When lying on the ground, is it possible to see under the door? A 5. That's a straight yes. Next question. Is there an obstruction wedging the door shut? A 6. That's a yes and. Okay, that and makes me think that something has been deliberately wedged under the door, suggesting that someone who is aware of the passage has tried to block access into the next chamber. This is where a table of players would bounce ideas around, but clearly I don't have that luxury. Hang on a minute, I've got an idea. First I'll need to make a few rolls, and we'll find out what happens in the narrative. Firstly, I need to determine whether Valen might have held onto something that might otherwise have been discarded. A high-low roll on a d20 will determine it. A low roll will indicate that he has kept hold of the required item. A 3. So far so good. Next, I need to make an intelligence check for the mage, but I'm going to apply a -4 penalty, meaning that Valen will need to roll a 12 or less. A 6. Finally, I need to know whether there is a big enough gap under the door to perform my intended action. Once again, a simple high-low roll should do it. Low means there is. Okay, let's see what happens. Chapter 35, Part 3, Day 37, Night. Party status. The party status is unchanged.
It's not going to give, Beric declared, getting up from the floor, where he had been peering under the stone door. Something is wedged under the door, and I cannot risk blunting my sword trying to force it out, he added, unaware that the enchantment on Callus Cledda meant the blade could not be dulled. The companions looked at each other, wondering how they were going to overcome the obstacle. The tension was broken when Valen unshouldered his pack and began rummaging through its contents. After a few moments, the mage found what he was looking for, and pulled from his bag an empty glass vial.
Dalion, the mage addressed the bard. Come with me.
The two Wayland men went back along the passage, pulled open the door, and disappeared back into the crypt. The remaining companions simply looked at one another, bewildered. A few minutes passed, and then Valen and Talion re-emerged. The bard was carrying one of the rock beetle's mandibles, while Valen held the vial, which now contained a cloudy yellow liquid.
What's that?
Beric asked, indicating the vial in the mage's hand. Valen held it aloft.
This, my friends, is the saliva of a rock beetle.
He replied, rather enigmatically, and seeing the confused expressions, he elaborated.
The saliva of a rock beetle is a powerful acid. Such is its potency that it can dissolve rock. Glass, like this potion vial, is able to withstand the effect of the acid. It was a simple enough matter to locate the insect's gland and use its own mandible to extract enough saliva.
Valen looked uncharacteristically pleased with himself.
Simple, perhaps, for someone whose wit is as keen as yours,
Lena complimented. Valen blushed and gave the cleric a rare smile, and seeing his face for a moment untroubled, filled her heart with joy.
So,
the mage said, regaining his composure and addressing Beric.
If we can coat this mandible with the saliva, you may be able to use it to apply the acid and dislodge the obstruction.
Beric took the mandible from Talion and held it steady as Valen gently poured the acidic saliva along its edge. A few drips fell to the floor and fizzled as it immediately began to burn through the stone. Somewhat gingerly, the big man lowered himself onto the floor and slid the mandible towards the obstruction. There was the sound of more fizzing,
as Beric shoved the beetle's jaw forward. There was resistance. He pushed harder, and suddenly, whatever it was that had been caught under the door gave way.
"That's it," he said, getting to his feet.
The big warrior carefully put the mandible to one side, then gripping the iron rings, he pulled the door open. Earlier, I asked the Oracle if something had been placed directly on the other side of the door, and the result was a no but. As someone clearly wants to prevent access to this chamber, I started to think that perhaps there was a trap that could be triggered by anyone attempting entry from the secret passage. Now, the likelihood is that it's Wiglaf who wants to keep intruders out, and I have already established that the Brethren have placed an agent at Innis Gwyn who has been assisting the Abbot. So it makes sense to me that it is they who have set the trap. But the question is, what kind of trap is it? Well, I have an idea on that. There is a wire attached to the other side of the door, so when opened, through a series of pulleys, it releases a pin, triggering the trap. The basic expert rules state that there is a 2-in-6 chance of encountered traps being triggered, but given how this trap is configured, I'm going to say that there is a 4-in-6 chance, as there is a slim possibility that the trap may fail in some way. Here is the roll. A 4. Okay then. There was a faint rattling sound as Beric stepped around the door into the chamber beyond, though he thought little of it. The room was unilluminated, and with only the faintest glow from Jenna's torch in the passageway behind him, it took a few moments for his eyes to become accustomed to the gloom. He could just make out the shelves affixed to almost every available piece of wall, crammed as they were with hundreds, if not thousands, of rolled up parchments. This must be the Scrollarium, he thought. Then he heard the rattling again, and a low hissing sound, and he caught a glimpse of something moving just a few yards in front of him. At that moment, Knut and Jenna entered the room behind him, the novitiate's torch suddenly filling the chamber with light. Beric cursed in alarm, as an unspeakable thing bore down upon him. Thank you for listening to Legend of the Bones. I hope you've enjoyed the show. If you like what you've heard, then please do consider giving it a positive review in your podcatcher of choice. Just one voice talent to thank in this episode. Returning in the role of Knut is the maestro himself, John Cohen, creator of Tale of the Manticore. Thanks, bud. If by some twist of fate you've not yet listened to Tale of the Manticore, then I cannot recommend John's show highly enough. You can also help by liking or reposting new episode announcements, or by recommending the show online or to a friend. You really can't beat the power of word of mouth. Alternatively, if you'd like to show your appreciation by buying me a metaphorical cup of tea, then I now have a Ko-fi page at ko-fi.com/legendofthebones. Any donations will go towards the show's running costs. I'd also love to know what you think of the show, and I do respond to every message I receive. So with that in mind, you can contact me on X at legendbones, Blue Sky at legendbones, Mastodon at legendbones at ttrpg-hangout.social, Instagram at legendofthebones, email at legendofthebones@gmail.com, or go to legendofthebones.blogspot.com for show notes, house rules, character profiles, art, maps, and more. Join me next time to find out what awaits our adventurers as the bones decide their fate. None shall escape the destiny of bone.
Looking for a new podcast? Come escape with Dice Company, a D&D adventure where four unlikely friends battle an evil empire. We've got epic storytelling.
Time for a new life, maybe a new name to go with his new face.
Thrilling fights.
What he'd like to do is kick this guy in his zombie balls.
Terrible teamwork.
If you want to do it, you can do it yourself.
And an extremely literal automaton.
For the mushrooms to work, they must be passed through a reindeer, and you must drink their urine.
That's Dice Company, available wherever you get your kicks.